Chapter 30 Paul remained at the wheel while Gamet tied Reynolds up.
I assume you secured our friend, he said when she appeared.
Hog-tied and sheep-shanked him, Gamet said. He's not going anywhere, but we should check on him in a little while.
Assuming we survive that long, Paul said. We're caught in the middle of a triangle. One boat off the port bow, another one off the starboard bow, and one that crept in behind us.
Gamet looked aft, spotted the lights of the third boat, and then turned back to Paul.
Have you tried calling for help?
Paul turned up the volume on the marine radio. Every frequency hummed with a garbled electronic sound.
Jamming the entire spectrum.
What other options do we have?
We're roughly halfway between the Raleigh and the coast, Paul told her. But it's all open water back to the Raleigh. We disappear out there, no one will ever know what happened. But the closer we get to the coast, the more likely we are to encounter other traffic. And within a few miles of shore, we should be able to use our cell phone. They can't jam those. Then there are the barrier islands to think about.
He pointed to the chart. A long row of islands mirrored the shape of the Gulf shoreline. The nearest was 5 miles away.
We could hide in the shallows or even go ashore if we need to. At least we'll have options.
Let's go for the islands, she said.
Paul moved the throttle forward slowly, and the launch surged with surprising power. The crew of the Raleigh had tuned the engine, removed the governor, and performed a few other tricks to give their boat extra power. It picked up speed easily, and before long, the lights ahead of them began to widen out, not because they were moving away, but because the increased speed had changed the angle of approach. It didn't last long.
Here they come, Gamet said.
Paul pushed the throttle to full and locked it there. The launch picked up more speed and began to bounce on the chop. Each landing threw a sheet of spray over the top, and despite the windscreen, Paul and Gamet were soon getting drenched. The two boats turned hard, but the Raleigh's launch was moving too quickly to be cut off. Before long, the three boats ended up abreast of one another.
Low-profile powerboats, Gamet said.
They're small and fast, but we can pack a punch, Paul said. Hang on.
He cut the wheel to starboard and swerved toward the nearest of the two boats, sideswiping it. The boats rebounded off each other, but the smaller craft took the worst of it. Its bow was forced up and to the side, catching the air. It came down with the nose pointing sideways, flipped several times, and vanished behind them in the dark.
One down, Gamet said. Great job.
Paul resisted the urge to smile and attempted the same tactic as the second boat swept in on them. The pilot of this boat was quicker. He pulled away and dropped back into a trailing position.
They learn fast, Paul said.
With that boat dropping back, Paul could do nothing but concentrate on the course ahead. He took direct aim at the nearest barrier island and held the wheel, swerving only slightly here and there.
We both know what's coming next, Gamet said.
She ducked down, putting some amount of protection between her and the trailing speedboat. Flashes from a firearm in the boat behind them were easy to see in the dark. The bullets were not. They whistled overhead and to the side, invisible and deadly if they found their mark. Paul crouched down, weaved a little more radically, but kept the course changes to a minimum. Every turn cut down on their speed and added to the distance they had to travel. With Paul handling the evasive maneuvers, Gamet began crawling toward the stern of the launch.
What are you doing? Paul asked.
I have Derek's gun, she said. I want to test my marksmanship.
She reached the stern and took a position against the transom. Looking out over the stern, she zeroed in on the bow of the trailing speedboat. She tried to time the rise and fall of each boat, waiting as a large sheet of spray dropped behind them and then firing off several shots.
Hit anything? Paul shouted, turning the boat once more.
Not that I can tell, she replied. Between them moving and you swerving all over the place, it's impossible to aim.
At least they're having the same problem.
When I shout to you, Gamet said, hold us steady, just for 2 seconds.
Will do, Paul said.
There was a reciprocal danger to that plan, underlined by the sudden shattering of the plastic windscreen as several bullets hit the boat. But Gamet trusted in her shooting skills. She grabbed a life jacket, placed it on the transom, and stretched her arms out over it.
Are you ready? Paul shouted.
Almost, she said.
She waited for the following boat to move in behind them.
Now!
As Paul straightened the boat up, Gamay exhaled and pulled the trigger repeatedly. The automatic pistol recoiled, chambered a new round, and fired it off in a rapid blur. In a few quick seconds, Gamay had sent 8 shots out into the dark. She ducked behind the transom and hoped to avoid return fire as Paul turned the boat again. When she looked up, their pursuer was turning and heading off course. Whatever or whoever she'd hit, the boat continued out into the dark and vanished. 2 down, she said. Gamay checked the magazine as the third boat began to move in. There were only 5 shots left, a problem their new pursuer did not seem likely to have. Looks like they're sending in Big Brother. Though they couldn't see it, they could tell the third craft was more powerful by the sound of its engines. Whatever it is, she's bigger and faster than us, Paul said. They could never hope to outrun it, nor could they bully it like Paul had done to the first attacker. Making matters worse, the boat's pilot seemed to be an expert. Gamay could hear the throttle modulating precisely as it went over the waves. Because of that, its bow remained steady, and sitting up on that bow was a high-powered weapon on a tripod. Turn! Gamay shouted. Paul whipped the boat into a turn as a stream of red tracers flashed across the water. With 5 shells between each tracer round, that first burst would have been enough to shred the fiberglass launch. Sounds like 50 caliber, Paul said. Not that it matters. All that matters is staying away from it, Gamay shouted. Paul did his best, but the new attacker matched every twist and turn. On the third change of direction, the 50 opened up and the launch took a barrage of hits. Chunks of fiberglass flew around them. One of the life rings was blasted off its hook and sent flying through the air. Gamay felt something tug on her windbreaker as if a bullet had clipped it. But fortunately, neither she nor Paul nor the engine took any direct hits. We're coming up on the island, Paul said. Maybe we can lose him in the shallows. I've got a better idea, Gamay replied. Head for the rocks if you can see any. Continuing his evasive maneuvers, Paul did his best to be unpredictable. 2 more bursts from the 50 lit up the night, but both were well wide of the mark. Meanwhile, Gamay rushed down into the cabin and came out lugging 2 of the heavy steel containers containing the bacterial cultures. Reaching the stern, she heaved the tanks up on the transom. Head straight for the island. We are. Turn at the last second. Got it, Paul said. 10 seconds. The speedboat was closing in again, lining up right behind them, setting up a kill shot for the man with the machine gun. Paul! Wait, he said. I can't! The machine gun began firing. Gamay ducked as more fiberglass was blasted from the transom. A sharp pain ran through her arm as a long splinter embedded itself in her skin. She winced and held on to the containers. Now! Paul shouted. Gamay opened the valves on the 2 tanks, shoving one off the transom to the left and one to the right. They hit the water just as Paul turned the wheel. As the venting gas reacted, 2 veils of fire spread out behind them. There was no explosion, no firestorm to cook the pursuing boat, nor any thundering detonations to blow them off course. Just 2 ballooning flashes of strangely colored fire, bright enough to blind. The pilot of the following boat did the only rational thing. He avoided both fires by racing between them. He came out the other side with his night vision compromised. Even then, he saw the island. But it was far too late. The boat hit the shore at 40 miles an hour, tearing the bottom out, rupturing the tanks on the outboard engines, and sending the remnants of the hull and the men flying onto the beach. Paul and Gamay fared better in the Raleigh's launch. They continued to turn, racing into the dark, scraping the bottom on some sand, but otherwise emerging undamaged. They left the barrier island behind and continued toward the mainland. After several minutes, without any sign of pursuit, they began to relax. I think we're in the clear, Paul said. Gamay pulled her cell phone out and began looking for a signal. I hope so, she replied. Now let's get in range and call the Coast Guard.